I think it's one of the most critical decisions that this generation is making, and that is how to have affordable, safe, reliable, available energy into the future. I think as we, and it's been well documented, how affordable energy makes your economy resilient, how affordable energy is something that raises all ships, so to speak, more than a lot of other policies out there. If you have affordable energy and it's reliable and it's available, you've got the makings of good success in a lot of ways. We are talking about that here today in Colstrip, Montana, Voices of Montana, 406 and on the road. We got a great lineup of people. Yes, we'll talk about the Energy Task Force and some AI things. We'll catch up with Dan Lloyd from Grid United. That's the North Plains Connector Transmission Project. And we'll kick things off here with the longtime mayor of Colstrip. As a matter of fact, John Williams was here when Colstrip began its incorporation. He was the first mayor of this city, and we'll talk about what's going on in town here as well. That today on Voices of Montana. Today, the Frank Bratton Middle School in Colstrip, Montana is where we find ourselves for this 23rd annual Energy Open, and it's a place where a lot of these energy industry folks, and you know, you can't find an industry or a city or even a person almost that's not connected to our energy industry. And so it's vital that we look at where we're going with it, right? We're seeing a lot of discussion about data centers and how much energy they're going to need. And we've got to figure this out. And I do think it's on our generation to do that. So appreciate you joining us for that. As Cody gave the numbers out, text a message 781-627-5483. He'll pass that along as we have a good lineup of guests, as I mentioned, starting with Mayor John Williams, Colstrip, Montana. How are you, sir?
Super, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you, and welcome to the 23rd Annual Energy Open in Colstrip. And we're gathering here at the Frank Matt Bratton Middle School to celebrate and to showcase how responsible energy development drives real economic vitality, creates dependable local jobs, and powers homes and business across our region with a 24/7 reliability. We're excited to have you here today, Tom, and we're excited to visit with the folks that are going to be providing information. We've got a great schedule of speakers that are coming up, and we're really excited to hear what they had to say about that activities that are going to extensively involve the future of Colstrip, Montana. You know, I think it's important to say that, you know, that to highlight the fact that Colstrip is more than an address on a map. It is a community whose hard work keeps the lights on for hundreds of thousands of families across the Pacific Northwest. And we really take a lot of pride in the men and women and the families that live and work here and what we do for the benefit of many. So thanks for being here, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity to sitting down here and visit with you about my favorite subject, which is Colstrip, Montana.
Colstrip, Montana. Thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you for your public service in this as well. There's a lot of things to kind of talk about here. One is how a community is supported and gets behind. And, you know, as we look at communities wondering and have a lot of questions about data center, you guys have lived next door, and it's been the heart of, you know, economic development here, the energy industry. So what's your sense now of how communities can approach, and there's a lot more to talk about, but what's your sense as a mayor of this community, how other communities can approach living with energy infrastructure?
You know, I don't know exactly what the impact will be or if we will be involved with data centers, but from what I understand, and my understanding of data centers, that creates jobs and opportunities for the future. And I look forward to hearing what those folks that are going to be developing the data centers have to say and what their involvement will be in the communities. And my suggestion, of course, to them is to work with the communities and, you know, put out so that the communities have an opportunity to hear what you have to say so we can put out a welcoming mat with the value and the benefit that perhaps you will bring back into our communities with data centers. There's a lot of misinterpretation, a lot of misinformation out there, I think, on data centers regarding particularly with water and those types of things. But we're looking forward to continuing interest on whatever can be developed to improve upon what we do so well in Colstrip. We have a tremendous quality of life here for the people that live and work here, and we look forward to the future of Colstrip. You know, and that's one of the things that brings to mind with the some of the activities that are going to occur on the building of the transmission line with Grid United on the transmission line that will originate in Colstrip and go east. The other thing is the recent changes of Northwestern Energy that has secured a major operational ownership to the Colstrip units. And we really look forward to partnering up with Northwestern Energy and what they're going to bring to the table and involvement in our community. We support them tremendously with some of the plans that I have listened to from their CEO, Brian Bird. I think he's a visionary within that organization, and I look forward to his involvement and the continuation with energy supply across the state of Montana.
How do you suggest that citizens get engaged in this and public officials as well? I mean, there's going to be a lot of that. And what we don't have right now is a lot of answers on what a data center looks like, so to speak, on the ground here. How do citizens get engaged? And have you experienced that? You know, when you go back to 1999, when the city was first incorporated and you're its first mayor.
In 99, when we first set up for incorporation, we got involved with a project that we didn't know a lot about, but we researched it. We got a lot of information, had a lot of support with moving in the direction of incorporation, and we've been very successful. We got into something we knew nothing about, and we were very successful with what we've been able to achieve the last 27 or so years. But my play on these folks that want to involve themselves, those individuals that are involved with the origination and organization and of data centers is to involve the communities, put out good information to the communities, work with the local leaders within the communities and provide good, accurate, factual information so that the communities are able to make good decisions on what they want to involve themselves in the future of things like data centers. I mean, I think where we're headed on it is a positive future for our community, and particularly with Colstrip on anything that involves energy. That's something that the men and women that work here that are very skilled at producing and mining of the coal and the power generation. So we're looking forward to any opportunities that are out there for our future.
You guys have got some projects I want to get to, and time flies real fast. But I'm curious about as you. For a number of years now, this was almost 2000, so you're 25, a quarter of a century into incorporation here and dealing with being a community in the heart of energy infrastructure. How have things changed in that time?
Well, it's been kind of an up and down road. You know, we've had some high points and some low points with a lot of negativity out there involving energy surrounding coal and those types of things. So it's been some high points, low points. But one of the things that we've always strived for within Colstrip is to have a positive look towards our future. We've always taken a positive approach on things, on building our community and working towards improving upon the infrastructure and working upon improving the services that we provided. Here years ago when the issues were out there with the shuttering of units 1 and 2, there was a lot of negativity out throughout the Pacific Northwest with energy that comes from coal. But we've always taken a positive approach on it. We've never taken a negative side. We've always been working towards a positive future rather than preparing for the negative. And we've been successful at it. So that's always been our position, to take a positive role on opportunities that we anticipated would be out there. You know, there was many times that I was contacted with, what are you going to do now that units 1 and 2 are going to shut down? And then a threat on units 3 and 4, but I never took a negative approach on it. I indicated to them, we're working to improve upon the things. We're not working towards shutting our community down, and we've done very well with that type of attitude.
And I think, Jim Acheson, who heads the Southeastern Montana Development Corporation and is putting on this 23rd Annual Energy Open, I think he exemplifies that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Jim is you know, he's the energy bunny as far as activities go surrounding Colstrip and forward thinking on, and this Energy Open is an a very great example of that. And Jim is the one that started this over 23 years ago. It was his idea on how that put something together to showcase the positive side of it. There was so much negativity out there that we needed to work towards the positive side of energy development and the benefits of positive positive energy development. And this showcases it, and it's a great opportunity to get this information out.
Yeah, I remember like Colstrip United created during that time when there was just, like you say, misinformation, but also people have real questions, legitimate questions too. And Colstrip, I think, stands out as a community that has answered a lot of those questions. Right now, John Williams is with us, the mayor of the city of Colstrip as well, which incorporated a number of years ago, 1999. You're doing like a state-of-the-art water and sewer project. So catch us up to date on the community. How are things going?
Well, we've done well. Probably beginning about 5 years ago, we concentrated on the water and sewer infrastructure. So we wanted to bring that up to a state-of-the-art service and providing that back to our customers. And we've been very successful at it. We've done great work with putting in our supervisor system of data control system, automated systems into the operation of both the water and sewer side. We've completed that, and now our emphasis is going to be on our streets. And we started that a couple of years ago. And as a matter of fact, this year we're into a major restructuring project on street. It's a big deal. It's about $2.4 million project, and we started it this early summer, and we'll continue on into the fall, and then continuation for the next 4 years on building our infrastructure on the street. So our first item that we needed to address was our water and sewer. We brought that all up to speed, up to date, and now we're concentrating on our sewer. I'll let you know, Tom, as I indicated earlier, with one of the things that we're very proud of is the fact that we've been able to do all of this work, and it's been over 10 years since we've ever had to go back to our customers and ask for any increase in cost associated with water and sewer. So we're very proud of that. We've worked very hard to keep our rates reasonably low I don't know that they're low necessarily, but reasonable rates for what our customers receive. And I mentioned earlier to you on our solid waste, our garbage pickup. We've operated that for it's almost 29 years now, and we've never had an increase in the cost of that service. Wow. And we provide cost of service for garbage collection, twice a week service, at no increase in cost for all the years that we've been in existence.
Almost 30 years, really?
Almost 30 years. So that's kind of amazing. And that's we work very hard at doing that. We've been able to capture funding and without it really impacting our residents and that receive the quality service that we provide. So we're real proud of some of those things that we've been able to achieve over this last 27 years, 28 years of incorporation.
Yeah, and the community shows it. It's a vibrant community too. Yeah. I love it.
It's a great community. We've got tremendous quality of life here with our Parks and Recreation Association, with our medical clinic, our school system. They're going through a major reconstruction of the high school as we speak, and our voters passed the bond to allow that to occur. It's several million dollar bond, and we're going to be building a lot of changes, a new athletic field up there, and new changes into the high school itself. So we're real proud of the support that we've received from our community to be able to continue to provide quality of services, both through the city, the school district, our medical clinic, and our parks and recreation.
John, thank you for your long time public service.
Well, thank you for saying that.
It makes a difference in communities.
Well, it's been a real benefit to me. I've taken a lot of pride in the opportunity to be able to provide, what I can do for the community of Colstrip.
Always look forward to catching up with you, too. Yeah. And you have a great attitude. It's always positive, that's for sure. Okay. Montana generates about 35 to 40 million megawatt hours. This is our state. I think Montana has an energy edge when it comes to looking towards our future. And again, I've very much one of those proponents of affordable, reliable, available energy as well. I just think that lifts so many ships in our economy as well, and then provides public safety. National security is a big part of that as well. So we focus on that here today as we're live at the 23rd Annual Energy Open. It's put on by the Southeast Montana Development Corporation. We'll have a chance to chat with Jim Atchison later, perhaps. Bob Morris will join us. He's the Lance Energy Chair from Montana Tech. Knows an awful lot about AI and data centers, and he's on the Governor's Energy Task Force as well. As I mentioned, Dan Lloyd now joins us from Grid United, and they're the ones that's developing that. It's got a nice name to it, the North Plains Connector, but that's exactly what it is. It's a high-voltage transmission line that connects kind of the east and the west grids, and surprising to find out years ago, Dan, that there was really no connection east and west. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, and just to your previous point, the U.S. grid is really three separate islands, the Eastern Interconnect, the Western Interconnect, and Texas, and Texas always
Texas loves that, I'm sure.
Yes,
yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
But the catalyst that formed our company was the fact that you mentioned that there's very little ability to transmit energy across those seams is the word. And so our project seeks to more than double the existing capacity to do that with one single project to help just create a more efficient grid.
And I got to say, in following Grid United over the years as well, I think you guys have done a lot of good things in terms of trying to reach out to people. I mean, it's a long distance, and a lot of those landowners have signed leases here, and I don't hear a lot of tussle here or tussle there about that. How do you manage, and as senior manager of community relations as well, this is kind of right in your wheelhouse, so to speak, but what do energy companies need to do when they've got such a huge project and so many questions about it and a lot of people to engage with?
Yeah, that's, again, our company was founded about 5 years ago after Winter Storm Uri in Texas that had some pretty devastating effects.
Yep.
And so, one, the folks that founded our company said, oh, this is a problem. And they realized that building linear infrastructure is very expensive, it takes a long time, and you're likely to be involved in lawsuits at some point.
Right.
And so they said, let's try this a little bit different. Let's try and go engage in communities, engage with landowners first. Before we start putting proposed lines on a map, let's see what the kind of macro issues are for the community. And then, you know, with individual landowners, the example that I like to give, the engineering plan might be most simple for us to cut through the north side of a rancher's pasture. And he says, well, that'd be a bit of an inconvenience to my operation, whether it's an irrigation pivot or... And I think historically the engineers ruled the day and they said, well, this is the cheapest, straightest
right.
route. And we took a different approach and said, let's work with, again, from macro siting decisions to those micro siting decisions where we think it's worth it to accommodate those landowners as much as we can. And that has, I think, really helped us develop those strong relationships. And any big project that proposes to come in and have an impact on a community creates questions, and we decided let's just be upfront and get out and try and answer those questions sooner than later.
Does anybody have any regrets about that? Did it cost a ton more? Did it thwart your efforts here or there? Did it take longer because you decided to be a little, like you say, less engineering about it, more community-related?
I think... there's certainly cost increases up front, that being on the ground and in communities and talking with landowners versus, sending them a letter and saying, here's where it's going.
Yeah.
It takes more time on the front end, and I guess our thesis, our our premise is that in the long run it will result in a project that actually gets built that avoids years of litigation down the road. That's, you know,
that's what's happening here, too, and it's really cool. It's a good example of it.
Yeah, knock on wood.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Dan Lloyd again, Grid United, Senior Manager of Community Relations, is the North Plains Connector Project. And it is a high-voltage transmission line that connects essentially Montana and North Dakota. I mean, we can imagine this line. I want to get an update on it, too, but we can imagine this line kind of starting or ending in Colstrip, so to speak, and then going east all the way toward to what?
Towards the Bismarck area.
To the Bismarck area. Huge transmission line, and it's unique in terms of this is not owned by Northwestern Energy, or it's not owned by Montana Power Company. It's owned by Grid United, so to speak. And I find that an interesting model. And then to hear that story about your owners thinking, the winter storm, Uri, is what kicked this whole thing off. There's no question behind this, except for the fact that, get us an update on where this is at. But this project in the number of years has really advanced well, I think.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I guess I would say the update is we've continued to, as you alluded to, sign on additional utility partners or customers.
Oh, okay.
And that our development model is somewhat unique in that we've identified projects that don't necessarily make sense for any one utility or any two utilities, but are at such a scale that they require, multiple utilities or other existing folks in the industry to come in and buy a slice of it. And so another kind of unique approach that we think identify these very high-value projects, spend some of that early at-risk capital to get it permitted, which the update is we anticipate by the end of this calendar year to have all of our federal permits. We've got our local permits in North Dakota. We're about to commence a process with their Public Service Commission. So, again, fingers crossed, but by the end of this year, we should be nearly fully permitted with a few trickling in early into 27, and then starting some of the, for a big construction project of this scale, we've got to build access roads and do some of that early kind of staging for construction and really commence construction in 2028.
What were some of the biggest challenges in this?
Again, I've said it a couple times, we're trying a lot of new things that haven't really been done. Mm-hmm. So we're creating a massive interconnection across the eastern and western interconnection, but we're also connecting three different markets. So
there are a lot of people to talk to.
Yes, yeah. And then we have a lot of utility customers that have to manage their processes. So it's... What I've said internally is, when you're doing a science experiment, you want to change one variable. Well, we're twisting a lot of different dials at the same time, but the good news is I've got a lot of really smart colleagues, and we've been able to work with some really great partners along the way.
45 seconds. What does this do for the country?
This helps increase access to affordable, reliable energy, and that's, something that folks talk a lot about. But I think no matter your political stripes or your business interest, folks acknowledge we need to invest in transmission infrastructure in this country. And I'm fortunate to work for a company that's really trying to do some of those big projects. And so I feel lucky to be a part of it.
It's a national security concern as well, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. As we increasingly rely on electricity, not just to power our homes, but do our banking, and just our dependence on electricity is ever growing, and so our access to affordable, reliable energy is just ever important.
Thanks for popping down here, Dan. I appreciate that.
All right.
For what you're doing.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, Dan Lloyd, Grid United. We're live at the 23rd Annual Energy Open in Colstrip, Montana, put on by the Southeast Montana Development Corporation. Tom Schultz alongside. Bob Morris is standing by. I want to relate to you. We spoke with Patrick Barkey earlier this week, and we talked a bit about energy, and one of the things that stands out is that, for a long time we had stagnant energy demand. Well, Well, that's changed an awful lot. Of course, there's more and more people onto the grid, but we look at data centers, and it's not only data centers. It's manufacturing. It's production. It's the kind of things that we need energy for, so communities can have the amenities that that adds to the quality of life. So that's on our plate here. And one of the things that I just think we need to stress is now is the time. Now is the time to make good energy decisions. Affordable, reliable, clean, and all those things are on the plate here. But it's up to this generation. I don't think we can kick this can down the road and say, let's not worry about affordability. We just need reliability. No, you've got to look at all those things, I think. And Bob Morris is with us here. He's a part of the governor's energy task force. We've relied on him for a lot of AI data in the past as the chair of the Lance Energy Program out of Montana Tech. And Bob, thank you so much for coming on here. I appreciate that. Is this the generation? Is this the deciding generation about our future of reliable, affordable, and clean energy?
Well, good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me on. And yes, now is the generation, and we need to take action and on projects that are going to take decades to mature. But it reminds me of the saying, there's two good days to plant a tree, and that's 10 years ago and then today. So today is a good day to start on the right energy trajectory here in Montana.
And it's not like we haven't had a good lead up to it. I mean, energy has been on our plate, and we've learned an awful lot. But our demand now is kind of forcing us, I think, to look at this future. And as a part of this energy task force, you guys are going to release a report here pretty soon. What's what's the buzz? What's coming out of this?
Well, there's a lot. You made a comment about the energy demand increasing, and
yes,
it is. But if you look back in history, in the United States, we grew from nothing in the early 1900s for 100 years. We grew at 4% per year, and then it flattened out for about a quarter of a century. The last 25 years, it's been flat. So we've gotten used to no energy growth.
Yeah.
Our supply chains have kind of slowed down. The regulations kind of crept in. Now we're trying to step on the gas again and grow at 2 or 3% per year. And people say, well, this is unprecedented. Well, not really. Pull out the history book. It was 4%. But it's going to take us a while to step back on the gas. But now we need to do it. And what's driving it is the data centers is one, but reshoring a lot of our manufacturing.
Yeah.
And here in Montana, mining. Mining, we're kind of right at the crossroads of critical materials in the country, and Montana needs more energy to run these mines. So it's now's the time to do it.
Are we going to be successful?
We will. And back to the governor's task force, the governor commissioned this task force to come up with strategies and recommendations to ensure reliable, affordable, and clean energy for Montanans. So that's our job. Our job is to look at what can the state do, and mostly what the state can do is get out of the way. So we looked at what kind of roadblocks were in place for slowing down in investment in Montana. And really, there's a lot of uncertainties right now. And we looked at, okay, what can we do? What can the state, the legislature, the governor's office do? And so that was kind of our charter.
You, along with Representative Gary Perry, who says hello, by the way, to everybody out there and may be able to chat with us, you are delivering a message today about this energy task force at this conference. What's in that?
Correct, yeah. So, Tom, I'm going to talk about the makeup of the task force. There were 20-some entities that were the legislators. There was many of the Northwestern Energy, Montana Dakota Utilities, Talon Energy, Grid United. Dan, who was just on, was part of that committee. Very wide array of all the power producers and some of the large consumers. And so that's the makeup, and we tried to cast a wide net. And then what I'm going to talk about is there's 7 different categories of recommendations that we're going to come forward with.
You got some recommendations.
Yes.
Oh,
so there's
nice.
There's a draft report out there right now on the DEQ website that's open, and you can read that. And there's the 7 buckets. There's reforming the utility regulation. There's establishing some energy leadership at the state,
yes,
and with the right size, not too much. We don't want to grow bureaucracy.
Yep.
There's a lot of several recommendations on regional markets and the transmission system. There's a kind of a catch-all category, drive economic development, but Montana's got some unique opportunity with our mixed regulated utility plus what we call open market or choice customers that we can use to entice some industry to Montana. We do need to look at taxes. Taxes is a big deal. Our infrastructure taxes are very high in Montana. Our utilities pay a lot compared to our neighbors in other states. And then we looked at specifically what we're promoting in all of the above or diversified energy portfolio. Yeah. We looked at what roadblocks are out there. And so there's a couple in particular, energy and geothermal, that we are recommending some clarification on those. And then finally, we looked at how do we optimize what's on our grid right now and promote more renewable resources. And so there's going to be some recommendations on efficiency and distributed energy resources and energy storage.
There's just a lot of things in that list to kind of talk about too. And I want to, we talked about it last week, but that draft plan is very readable and it's on the DEQ site.
Correct.
And so I just encourage people to go into that. So out of those seven categories, what stands atop for you? I mean, you were a co-chair of this task force and generation.
Right.
You guys were focusing on.
Right. Well, there's a number that kind of bubbled to the top. One of which is the first one I mentioned, which is the utility regulation reform. And so Montana Public Service Commission does a good job of watching out for the needs of the ratepayers.
It does.
And it's a very hard, smart, hardworking people, but we are one of the few states in the country that have an elected public service commission, and most are using appointed because they can select the commissioners with the right mix of skills and also that can improve the decision making process, and it can also improve Montana's participation in regional energy initiatives. We're not much of a force right there, and so there will be a recommendation that's coming out of the task force to have the legislature review the structure and the makeup of the Public Service Commission. And so you can expect, and I know the legislature is moving forward with some legislation to recommend an appointed Public Service Commission.
Yeah, that's interesting too, and that's always something that we bandy about a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm interested as well when I saw those recommendations about leadership, about having a specific plan to, it's not mm-hmm. only Montana. I mean, this whole country needs leadership when it comes to energy and an honest discussion about
it. Right. So that's one of the other major categories is energy leadership. And some people have called it the energy authority. But if you look at in Montana, all the pieces are there for a strategy. You've got all the great work that the DEQ does, the Energy Bureau under Ben Brower, and then the work that the folks over in the Department of Commerce do, and then the Montana Facility Financing Authority. All the pieces are there, but we don't really have an organized strategy. So the idea there is to do a more structured energy strategy for the state, and so that we can put a clear path together for, say, any private industry that wants to come in and invest in Montana. What's Montana's strategy? Where are we headed? That needs to be defined. And so I think with just a little bit of clarity, we can put together this plan at the state level to send clear signals to industry.
How do we engage the public? How do we not let our energy future be decided by those people who are, you know, in making money off it, so mm-hmm. to speak?
Right. That is important, and part of it is through your elected officials. Like mm-hmm. like on the task force, we had Representative Perry here from Colstrip, and then Senator Pope from Bozeman was there.
Republican and a Democrat.
Correct. Yeah. And those two are in very close alignment, which is neat, and they're also very connected with their constituents. And so that's one way. The other way is we do need to do some public education. There's a need for, you know, we have some big decisions to make on geothermal and nuclear and things like that. And so we're part of these recommendations here is to develop some public-private partnerships and to engage the community. And so, you know, one project that I'm working on the side is you know, how do we talk about nuclear energy in Montana? And there's, you know, some people are very for it. It's generally a bipartisan thing, but some people have some concern over it. So let's engage the public. And so we're working on some strategies with engaging the public on that.
That's good because, you know, for a long time, Bob, I think the public just kind of let it roll a little bit. After World War II, you know, things were – but we got to get our hands back on directing our own future, so to speak. And the Lance, you know, the Lance Energy Program is a part of that too.
Correct. Yeah, that's part of my role. And my position is funded with private funds, but part of my job is public education because the sponsor realized that we need to do that, right? And that's, you know, part of Montana Tech. We set up nuclear programs, the first in the state, and then part of that is we're looking at some outreach to the public on education, both at just general public, but we're also looking at how do we get this injected into our students, and so going, you know, directly to the middle school science teachers and educating them on nuclear, geothermal, all the diverse energy portfolio, and to give them the education, but also encourage our young people to pursue careers in energy.
So when we're ready for nuclear energy, you've got the wizards coming out of Montana Tech to help us with that?
That's the game plan.
All right. Hey, there's so much to share, too, and I'm going to save a few minutes for Jim Acheson as he's running around here and see if I can catch him in between stops. But you've got a paper to release here shortly on data centers. Talk about that.
So I do a lot of speaking on data centers. There's a lot of questions about power and water use, and so I've done a lot of research on that, and I've got a couple of technical papers that talk about the history of electricity and the demand and pricing, and then the impact of data centers and mining, et cetera. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, what does that mean? The kind of spoiler alert is I think it's a great opportunity to leverage this growth and drive prices down like we have for 100 years. So look at that's the one side is the electric. The other one is the water use on data centers. Turns out they can use a lot of water if it's available, but really what it is, it's a matter of matching the data center cooling system design with the local water resources, and then those decisions can be made before any dirt's moved on the ground.
I'm going to ring on your bell and have you come back on for that too.
Sounds great, Tom. Yeah.
Bob, thank you so much for
my
taking
pleasure.
Us on.
Yeah, you betcha.
Yep, Lance Energy Chair Bob Morris. Back here at it's Frank Batten Middle School. They're, as John Williams had mentioned, the mayor of Colstrip, they're doing some reconstruction at the high school, which is pretty cool. And this is a nice facility for a middle school gym.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Jim Acheson is with us here. He's head of the Southeast Montana Development Corporation and really the one behind, you know, putting this up 23 years ago.
Oh. Yep.
Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you, Tom. We appreciate you coming down, and like I said, you're a rock star for us, we always appreciate the opportunity to get the truth out there, we actually started this, as you may know, in 2004 to basically showcase the economic benefits of responsible energy development, because there's a lot of opinions out there on what is responsible energy development, what we should be doing on energy and this and that, or what we should not be doing. So we decided to start this, and every year is a little different. And the speakers lineup this year has been fantastic.
Yes.
So as you've had a few of them on your show.
Yeah. John had mentioned, you know, years ago that there was some opposition, but as you came on board, you know, you turn things around in terms of community-oriented messaging regarding energy. You know, maybe talk about that. Talk about how important that is to educate about energy and the community connection.
Yeah, that's a good point. Most productive planning is proactive before there's a situation or a negative thing, but energy is no different. And so we've done a lot of proactive planning over the years. Most people don't even hear about it, but one of them was our diversification strategy that came out 9 years ago. And there's very few communities in Montana that have a diversification strategy, and Colstrip is one of them. And it helps kind of create the roadmap of keeping the train on the tracks and where we're going. And it's been so successful, especially with the energy portion of it, that we're having to update it this year because of all the new opportunities that are coming on board for this, not only this community, but the entire state of Montana as well.
You know, I know you're just here for a wrap-up, and you're really busy running around. You got great guests lined up. We'll be out in Westmoreland Rosebud Mine. We'll get to take a tour of that. The Rosebud Power Plant as well. I've seen both of those. Very informative stuff. And thank you for doing this, Jim.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. I know it's a busy time as well. It's
very, very, very good. Thank you for having me on.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.